Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Connor Dockery.
Who do you think you are? I am.
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bella Notte Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
To a Monday of On the Docket, another football react edition of the program, mostly, and we're sprinkling in a little bit of Tigers at the end of the day as well. So without further ado, Detroit Lions, they improved to 3-1. A very defensive game, but the Lions coming out on top. 34-10 over the Cleveland Browns. Let's get to the highlights.
13th play of this drive coming up. Flacco up under center. Turns, gives to Judkins. Judkins tries the left side. This time he folds his way into the end zone for the touchdown. It took four cracks down there from inside the one, but finally Cleveland got in. Goff back, Goff looking, Goff stepping up, rolling right, being chased in trouble, throws downfield, got to complete, that is Amon-Ra, down the right sideline, inside the 40 in Cleveland territory, and runs out of bounds at the 35-yard line. Miles Garrett with pressure again, but Jared Goff able to elude him and find Amon-Ra that time for 25. Jared takes the snap, turns, gives to Jameer, right side, gets to the 5, Jameer to the 3, to the 2, to the 1, yes. To the end zone, touchdown Detroit Lions! Jameer Gibbs picked up blockers down the right side, ran it in from 8 yards out, and the Lions are an extra point away from tying this game. Flacco back, Flacco looking, floating it down the left side. It is picked off by Kirby Joseph. There was not a Brown within anybody's sight down the left sideline. Flacco threw it up for grabs, and Kirby ran under it. Flacco wants to throw. Blitz comes. Hit as he throws. It is almost picked off. I think it was. DJ Reed made the diving grab down the right sideline inside the 10 and knocked out of bounds at the 5-yard line. DJ Reed just that time dove right over the receiver and made the grab and took it down the field, and the Lions are going to have it first and goal. Jared takes the snap, fakes the give, looks right, throws out there. Wide open. Amon-Ra St. Brown, touchdown Detroit Lions. Hard run fake, 14 snuck out the right side. Goff found him, put another 6 on the board for Detroit. Not a great punt, it's going to come up and field it at the 34, makes the first man miss there, here's the 40. Yeah, going to the 50, Leaf angling at the 40, to the 35, to the 30, to the 25. Say goodbye, Khalif Raymond to the house, touchdown Detroit Lions. Oh baby, what a run back. And that started with him making the first man miss. Khalif with some magic out there, and the Lions extend their lead. Jared takes the snap, quick hitter right side, got it complete. That is Amon-Ra trying to get to the edge. He will, touchdown Detroit Lions. Just outran that defense to the right side that time, and the Lions extend their lead. That's going to do it. Two teams will meet out in the middle of the field to say job well done, job better done on this day by the Detroit Lions, who pick up the victory by a score of 34-10 over the Browns.
And there you go. And this game was pretty much exactly as I thought it would unfold in terms of the Browns' offense really not good. But the defense is really good. It's one of those teams where, you know, the defense, when it's playing exceptionally well, can put the team into a position to win, even with a very bad to, at best, a mediocre offense. And initially, it looked kind of scary. Lions, of course, go three and out. The Browns score on their first drive. And I thought they were going to get the Lions defense another goal line stop, just like they did against the Ravens on Monday Night Football, but unfortunately not able to get it. So the Browns actually led 7-0. And then from there, after those first drives for both teams, the Lions just took off. Able to build up a 20-7 lead at halftime. They score 20 points unanswered. And it was just a field goal for the Browns the rest of the way. Now, you look at some of the numbers a little bit closer than the score would indicate. For example, total yards, 277 for the Lions, 249 for the Browns. So, again, the Browns' defense, we knew going in that they had a really good defense, but I was actually surprised. Like, their defense is actually better than I thought. And there were times where the Lions really struggled offensively in this one, but the Lions' offense mostly came from the success that the Lions' defense opened up for it. In the case of, you know, two interceptions. That first one, by the way, was like one of the funniest interceptions I've ever seen in terms of, like, what was Joe Flacco doing? Who was he throwing to? Like, you know, usually in some of those plays you can see, okay, maybe he thought the receiver was going to be here, or, oh, the receiver was, you know, going to be in that spot, but it was just a bad throw. But that play, I just straight up don't even know what was going on in Joe Flacco's head to cause him to throw it to absolutely nobody but Kirby Joseph. He was the only guy in the area, anywhere within a 20-foot radius of the spot that he threw the ball. So the defense for the Lions. Now, I did going in saying, like, okay, I want the Lions defense to make a statement because this is a really bad offense, the Cleveland Browns. So the defense has to look good in this game. And I thought they did. Defense definitely looked good in this game. But that said, the Cleveland Browns offensive, it's like literally night and day between the Cleveland Browns defense and the Cleveland Browns offense. Really, really good defense, but just as good as their defense is as bad as their offense is. Like, that was just a nightmare of an offensive showing that the Browns put on. Now, the Lions defense definitely did a great job pressuring Joe Flacco all game into making rush decisions. Of course, throwing those two interceptions, the Lions able to sack him three times. Two of those by our guy, Aiden Hutchinson. Yeah, he's definitely fully back up and running, which is great to see, by the way. But no, the Browns just, wow, I could not believe how bad their offense was. So Joe Flacco, miserable. 16 of 34 passing, 184 yards, a 39.3 passer rating. Just abysmal. Now, again, not the best offensive game either for the Lions, but just those positions that the team was getting in as a result of the defense. The defense led into the offense. You know, the offense had a lot of short fields to work with, and as a result, they didn't have to work as hard as they did against Baltimore, for instance, where they had those, you know, those two drives of, you know, 95 plus yards. Didn't have to do that against the Browns. So a good win overall for the Lions. It is as I expected. You know, the Browns a good defense, but just a miserable offense. And I thought, you know, the Lions overall would just, it would be just an overall, just way too much for Cleveland to handle. I expected a double-digit win, and I got a double-digit win. And, of course, Kirby Joseph, that punt returned. Sorry, he got the interception. Khalif Raymond, he's the one who did the punt return for the touchdown. And anytime you can get special teams touchdowns and even defensive touchdowns, like a fumble recovery for a touchdown or a pick six, that's icing on the cake for the team's point total. Didn't get any of those defensive touchdowns, but they got that punt returned for a touchdown. Definitely fun to watch. This Lions team, again, just too much to handle for this Cleveland Browns team. And they improved to 3-1, and they definitely got some help. The Lions now first in the division. The shocking game last night, the Packers tie 40-40 with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think anybody expected the Cowboys to walk out victorious, but the fact that they almost walked out victorious was kind of crazy. They were leading late before the field goal at the end of regulation by Green Bay tying it, sending it to overtime. Both teams just getting a field goal in overtime. So Green Bay 2-1-1. Meanwhile, the Vikings, they lose in Dublin, Ireland, 24-21 to the Steelers. So both those teams, I was expecting this to be a week where we have 3-3-1 teams in the NFC North, but that didn't happen. The Bears eked out a win in the last 2 minutes against the Las Vegas Raiders, so the Bears do improve to 2-2, but regardless, the Lions in control of the NFC North for now, 3-1 after this win. And they got the Bengals, the Joe Burrowless Bengals. And the Bengals on a slightly shorter week, too, because they play tonight at Denver for Monday Night Football. They really didn't look good in their last game against the Vikings, their first full game without Joe Burrow. So the Lions should be able to pick up a win there. They got the Chiefs next, who look a little bit improved. They were able to beat the Ravens in their matchup yesterday. Then they got the Buccaneers, which I don't know, kind of seems sketchy, but they seem like they could be a pretty tough matchup with, you know, they were able to really fight against Philly, even though they really weren't in control of the game, still made Philly work for the win yesterday. Then they got the bye week, Vikings, Commanders, Eagles, Giants, Packers. So there's still a lot of winnable games here in the foreseeable future. But able to get the win yesterday, that's a matchup that they, you know, should have beat on paper going in. And they got the win. So even though the offense had its struggles in the game against that good Cleveland defense, you know, the overall as a team, able to put it together, the defense and special teams, able to put the offense in a position to where they're able to make the plays required in order to get the win. And it's funny to say, you know, the offense kind of struggled even though they put 34 points on the board. You know, this was more of a game that based on how the offense was playing, probably would you'd expect only maybe like 17 points to be on the board. But they doubled that. Good stuff. Detroit Lions win. And they move on to the next one against Cincinnati on the road next Sunday. Dan Campbell, interesting tidbits in his post-game press conference. I always love editing these post-game press conferences after a win. Always love the positive vibes, Dan Campbell. You hate editing these after a loss. It was tough. After that opening season loss. But we'll have that Dan Campbell post-game press conference, some of those snippets. We'll have that coming up next. It's Football React Monday. This is On the Docket back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
I'm going to have to set aside that rejoin song exclusively for when Luke is filling in. This is On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Kettlebell Hotspot, where you build raw functional strength and core stability, improve your cardiovascular endurance and metabolic conditioning, and enhance your mobility, balance, and coordination, all without the wear and tear of a traditional workout. Join the team today, Kettlebell Hotspot in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. So all smiles in the postgame for the Detroit Lions, Dan Campbell. after the team's 34-10 win over the Cleveland Browns. Here is the opener for Dan Campbell in the post-game press conference.
Okay, let me start with this. You know, we said going into this game, our defense was going to really need to set the tone in special teams. And offensively, man, we'll be smart. We'll find our spots. And really, for the most part, that's the way the day went. I thought our defense set the tone for the day, man. Those three takeaways, Leaf on the punt return, and offensively, we were able to turn those three takeaways into 17 points, which was huge. So look, the grand scheme of things, coming off a big win Monday night, short week, come out, find a way to close that out and play really, really good defense. I was proud of the guys for that. Is there a lot to clean up? Yes, there is. There's a ton, particularly offensively. We know there's things we can do better, but that's also a good club over there. So good win. Proud of the guys for being ready to go, you know, locked in. And now that's win number three. On to the next one.
On to the next one. We're in the business part of the year. Just pick up the win, move on to the next one. And again, it's just, this team is, it's great to see them just fully up and running. I've been saying it the last two games, as a matter of fact, you know, seeing them, you know, this early. Because last year it took about four games before they were finally, you know, fully rolling offensively and defensively swarming. Whereas this season it was just that first game against the Packers, which since then the Packers have really not looked great. Of course, able to beat the Commanders, and then they dropped a game against Cleveland, and then a tie against the Cowboys. So yeah, Cleveland, maybe they're not as good as they looked in that first week. And I've said it before, that first game, I think it was a combination of the Packers coming out with their A-plus effort, and then the Lions coming out flat. That's what that first game was. But the last three games have been terrific for the Lions, and there are three games where they have to find different ways to win. Of course, they blow the doors off of the Bears week two. Week three, they have to gut it out in a shootout with one of the best teams in the AFC, the Baltimore Ravens. And then in this game, they have to overcome a really tough defense in order to try to win, and still able to put up 34 points on the board, despite some struggles throughout the game offensively. And, of course, Khalif Raymond can sometimes get buried on the roster, on the stat sheet, with all the big names, big contributors, stars on this Lions team. You know, it's easy to overlook Khalif Raymond. I've even overlooked him. You know, in the offseason, speaking of, who could be that number three wide receiver guy, you know, even I overlooked him, but he's been doing a great job all season on special teams and, of course, able to get a punt return for a touchdown in yesterday's game. So Dan Campbell asked about the impact that he makes, not only in this game, but on the team in general.
I don't know if I can say enough great things about Leaf. He's such a stud. I mean, the guy, look, we came in Wednesday, and, you know, Phipp and I were talking, and Phipp says, I think we need to, you know, let him cut it loose, tell him to cut it loose a little bit on these, you know, some of these punt returns. And which, it's always a feel thing, right? And a lot of those, man, you're inside the 10. At what point do you let it go? At what point do you see if you can get one return or you fair catch? And we said, hey, we're going to get these blocked up. Leaf, go after it. And, man, he was aggressive. He was aggressive. And he took that to heart. He trusted our guys. And he was fearless the whole game. I mean, all I think anybody really saw was that return. He was fearless the whole game. And we had some guys, we were this close, man. We missed a couple of blocks early. But we really did a good job on that one return. And a lot of it was him too, the way he hit it and broke through there. But I mean, the guy just said, okay, you want one? I'll give you one. Here we go. So, And it takes to do some of those that he did and to take those returns without fair catching, knowing somebody's coming about, you know, full speed and they're about 5 yards from you, and to trust the fact I'm going to be able to get this fielded and stick my foot in the ground and go. It's just, I mean, you got to be wired different. And that's this guy. He is. So everybody loves Leaf. He's a pro. He helps us on offense. He helps us on teams. He helps the young guys. He's a great teammate, and he's a stud.
You know, Coach Campbell really missed an opportunity there at the end to say, everybody loves Raymond. I think you could hear him hesitate. He said, everybody loves Leaf. You know, he thought about saying it, but he didn't want it to kind of turn into that punchline. So, but no, the impact that he made, especially in yesterday's game, is definitely huge. Having a guy like that be able to step up on the special teams. And of course, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but you know, the Lions, this is the third game in a row, third different type of win in a row that they've been able to pick up. And he was asked about that flexibility, the dynamic ability with this team to, you know, not only be able to win this type of game, be able to, you know, win in different ways. And this is what he talked about last week. You know, something along the lines of winners win games or whatever. But finding ways, different ways to win games, you'll win more games. So here he is asked about winning another type of game.
Well, I just think you play to what you believe your strength is going to be for that game. And I felt like our defense could set the tone for this game. And we were going to play that way. And see if they could earn it over there and play off of it and feel our way out here a little bit offensively. And we did that. And special teams is going to need the help too. So I thought what we went in and the style at which we played and how we wanted to play, I thought we did that, you know, and it did help us win that game. I just think we can be cleaner. That's all.
Yeah. And again, not the perfect game, especially offensively, but you know, hey, you're going to have games where your offense struggles and you have to be able to adapt. The defense has to step up, and especially the defense did step up yesterday. Special teams stepped up in a big way as well, not only with that Khalif Raymond touchdown, but, you know, able to get some consistently good returns and put the team in good field position. And even if a drive stalls out, be able to put the Browns in a position where they have a long field ahead of them. You know, guys in other areas have to step up if one area's, you know, lacking. You know, if the defense is struggling, the offense, you know, needs to step up. And, you know, it's the sort of same line of thinking. So yesterday, an example of a game where the defense and special teams step up big time in a game where the offense was definitely not rolling like it has been in the previous two games against the Bears and against the Ravens. And one thing I was impressed about is not only with yesterday's game, but the last three games. So the first game of the season, the Packers able to sack Jared Goff four times. Jared Goff has not been sacked a single time. And of course, that first game, one of the offseason questions was what this offensive line was going to look like. And after that first game, it was like, ah, geez, you know, this might be brutal. But the last three games, zero sacks allowed to Jared Goff. So how the offensive line, how they've been stepping up.
Yeah, well, we always feel better knowing the two tackles that we have when we go against some of these really good rushers. You know, that always gives us more hope than probably some teams do, because we feel like our two tackles, man, that's where they can really excel. But we also knew we needed to use some resources over there. You know, Myles Garrett's a hell of a player. You know, I've said, you know, I think Malik Collins is an outstanding player. So, but it says a lot, because I thought those guys did a heck of a job. And I thought Goff did a really good job in the pocket. You know, he really stepped up and maneuvered on a lot of these too. So I thought they all kind of worked hand in hand. Our receivers, I thought, tried to play fast and get open early. So all of that, you know, plays into it.
And really, any quarterback needs a great offensive line in order to thrive. And specifically a guy like Jared Goff, who's not the most mobile quarterback. He's not the quarterback that can scramble out of danger when the pocket collapses and be able to make a play on the ground. He's just not that guy. So when he has good protection and he's not getting sacked, that's when Jared Goff excels. And that's why Jared Goff in the last three seasons, I would say, two or three seasons, he's been a top five quarterback in the NFL because he has the time to make his plays. Of course, there were times yesterday where he was pressured into making a throw sooner than he would have liked. But, you know, able to avoid getting sacked, avoid those plays where there's a big loss. I mean, that's been huge. And that's credit to the offensive line. And last comment that right here was pretty interesting on Campbell was asked if the offense this year has met or even exceeded what he saw from last year's offense.
Well, I don't know if we can say what that is or isn't yet. You know, does have we exceeded or where are we at? Look, that's good that we were able to turn those takeaways into points because that's really where they came from to start. And that takes, you have to finish those drives out. We did that. All right, that's good. But ultimately, we left a lot out there, and that is a good defense. I said that from the get go. We knew it was going to be, but man, when you have false starts, you have holding, you have a illegal formation, you have that's got nothing to do with them. That's on us, and those are the ones that really just kind of eat at you a little bit. Like man, you know, we got in a ton of these third and longs because we have penalties or something. You know, have a negative play we shouldn't have a negative play on. So. Those are the things you just want to feel like you're playing cleaner than that. I know we can play cleaner than that offensively, but I also know that's a good defense. And yes, we did put up 34. And in the grand scheme of things, man, you better be careful grading wins. You know, that's a win. It's a good defense. We got number three, and now it's on to the next one.
And that is actually a good point that he brought up, you know, with some of those penalties. You know, there was a drive early that was completely killed with penalties, but despite that, still able to hang 34 on a defense like that. And that's what's been most impressive of this Lions team, of these three big wins. You still kind of felt like, you know, they still could have played a little bit better in each of those three wins. And that's why I'm really excited about the Lions, how they've started and moving forward as definitely a front runner for the Super Bowl, or at least the favorite to come out of the NFC, because as good as the Lions have been in these three wins, it's like it still feels like there's a whole nother gear that they have to hit. So if they're already rolling right now, you know, and there's still a whole nother gear that they can hit, boy, whenever they do find that gear, look out, rest of the NFL. High school football action on Friday. Lots of big highlights, lots of fun games that we had. Well, the two games we broadcast. That's technically a lot, but a lot to break down on the other side from Friday night high school football. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson's Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and our friends at Polly's Country Market. You can always save more by signing up for My Market Rewards. Especially good if you go in there all the time like I do. Just rack up those points and you can redeem said points and save even more. Check out all the deals online, country-markets.com, and go into the Polly's Country Market location nearest you. We had some fun games on Friday night for high school football. And I tell you, on K105.3 especially, with myself and Mark W. Daly, we've been well overdue for a good football game as the first four games of the season, all blowouts, games that were essentially over by halftime. Meanwhile, in this game, the Mounties, Northwest, taking on Marshall, classic I-8 matchup. We were hoping ahead of this game that this would be finally the game that is at least close. And this one didn't disappoint. So we got the highlights for you. Marshall in the first quarter getting going with an early score to go up 6-0.
Low snap, quick handoff. Olapade again charging. Oh, it's a quarterback keeper. And all alone, Wado. Touchdown, Marshall. Just throwing off the whole Mountie team. They thought it was handed off to Olapade. And Wado, able to just keep it himself, sweeping to the near sideline and punch it in.
Marshall actually scored in their first three drives of the half. And it was a very quick half as well. Both teams really taking their time between plays. Not a whole lot of stoppages. And Marshall able to eventually take a 12-0 lead, but Northwest able to capitalize, put together a nice drive, plus the two-point conversion after.
Three right, one left for receivers. Christner, the snap, quick float throw up the middle, and that one's caught, and he's going to take it into the house. Touchdown, Mounties to Avery Enspa.
Missed assignment, and the Mounties are going to take it. Nobody on him. Ran right through the defense, wide open at about the 7-yard line. Falls right in the bread basket. He runs in untouched. Mounties on the board.
So that was a fun score in the second quarter for the Mounties. Marshall coming back, able to take a 18-8 lead at halftime, but Northwest had a big second half. Here's a score from Gabe Christner. The touchdown throw from the quarterback to bring the Mounties within 3 points in the third quarter.
Christner airs to the end zone. Caught! Touchdown, Mounties! Row the dough! Catches one to bring it within one score.
They faked it right off of that B gap, and everybody bit, gave them enough time to get some separation. Wide open in the end zone, and we've seen he's been able to drop it on a dime, and he did that time.
So that brought it to 18-15 with Marshall in front. And then Marshall getting a big touchdown score to push it to a 2-possession lead again.
Quarterback keeper Wado has it on the near side, and this time he sneaks in. No penalties this time. Touchdown, Marshall.
Well, he goes to hand it off to big number three. Everybody crashes down on that one, so he just keeps it, bounces it outside, and walks right on in, untouched.
But the Mounties wouldn't be done yet. Row de Doe, a huge touchdown in the fourth, bringing the Mounties within 3 points again.
Christner under center, first and 10 from the 44. Fakes the handoff, looking the air, throw deep near the near sideline, and caught at the 25-yard line, turns and runs, and he breaks the tackle, 15-10-5, touchdown, Mounties!
Threw that into double coverage and just ran away from the defenders. They were trying to latch on. They just couldn't get the handle on them.
And then the Mounties' defense forcing a turnover on downs, and then able to go right to the goal line with the dying seconds of the game, and with 13 seconds left.
Fourth and one. The snap. Pitch out to the near side. Able to sneak in! Touchdown, Mounties! Jeffrey Miller gives Northwest the first lead of the night.
And they did it. They lined up like they were going to go up the gut, like they were going to push it in. All of a sudden, you got three people just running as fast as they could towards the pylon, and they get in.
Boy, what a moment. And then Marshall, they showed the ability to pull off a big play at any time, and they had a chance late. But Northwest, the Mounties, they had something to say about that.
Here's the snap. Wado looking downfield, throw up the middle. Intercepted to end the game. Northwest 20-15-10 brought out of bounds. A game-clinching interception.
Wow.
Keith Edward.
Oh,
zeros,
man.
On the clock. And it's over.
30-26, the final. Northwest getting their second win of the season, improving to 2-3. Big time win over their I-8 rivals, the Marshall Redhawks. And boy, as I said, it's been nothing but blowouts to this point on our K105.3 coverage. So it was really nice to see a back-and-forth close game and have the Mounties come out on top. Meanwhile, on WKHM Jackson's News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, it was a Catholic League matchup. Lumen Christi and Divine Child. Lumen able to get on the board early with Benny Gaston.
And they go with Gaston, and the QB keep takes it into the end zone, and the Falcons are no longer unscored upon. 6-0 Lumen Christi.
Tammy and Rich watching from their porch, looking for the balloons, and yeah, they're out. They're out.
However, Divine Child able to take the lead in the second quarter. And this would be a good game for the rest of the game.
The Falcons, shotgun for Sheridan. Two receivers to his left, coming to motion across the formation. Fakes it, rolls out left, throwing the end zone. Caught, touchdown, Falcons.
So that at that time put Divine Child up 10-7. Lumen would get the lead back in the third quarter. Gaston again.
All right, the goal line stand. Gaston leading again this time. Still no signal.
Yeah, I think they're spotting that.
There's
ball
the touchdown.
Oh, okay.
Signal.
That was a late call.
So at that time, 13-10. Lumen in front. And then Divine Child able to get the big score, putting them in front later in the third quarter.
Looking to maybe pitch out. He's under pressure. Now he's looking to throw. Gets a step and gets it to Thomas. And Thomas still on his feet on the sideline. He's got one guy to beat. Does beat him. Takes it inside and a touchdown Falcons.
He's going to come back.
Yeah,
we're still going to be a big play, but he did get a little block in the back.
Yeah. They're picking up the
picking
flag.
It up. See, that was right in front of us, Steven. I thought, boy, that was an unnecessary block in the back.
So despite that, 17-13, Divine Child. Lumen had a chance late in the fourth quarter, but unable to come through on fourth down.
Single back. Gaston looking to throw. Into the goes outside one-on-one, and the defender jumps the play. Solares Vite knocks it down, incomplete pass, and with 2:29 to go, 17-13, Titans trail.
And that would end up being the final score.
And there's the victory formation, the kneel down, and that's going to do it. 17-13, our final celebration from Dearborn Divine Child on the sideline.
That's a playoff-like celebration there.
That
shows you how the big game this is.
This is a Division IV football team celebrating a big win over a Division VI Lumen Christi team.
So there you go. Lumen falls 17-13, and they're now 2-3 on the season. But again, a very, very tough schedule that they've had so far. Two games again, Northwest over Marshall, 30-26. Lumen falling 17-13 to Divine Child. And our coverage this week on K105.3 with myself and TMWD, we've got Columbia Central and Vandercook Lake, Cascades matchup, and on WKHM Jackson's News Talk at 970 AM, 101.5 FM with Captain Steve and Brian Haynes. It'll be Jackson versus Monroe. And, of course, try to get some of the coaches on this week. Get some of the thoughts as the season has progressed, now in the latter stages, if you can believe it or not. How fast this high school football season has rolled as we go on into week 6 this week. So that'll do it for the football portion of this program. Detroit Tigers, officially in the playoffs. Gonna break down how their weekend went and all the different playoff matchups. It's on the other side. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery. Weekdays at noon.
On the docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bella Notte Ristorante, Bud Light, and Tri-County Water. So the Tigers going into the weekend, one last series against the Boston Red Sox, and this was there's a lot of different directions that that this could go. The Tigers could have missed the playoffs altogether. They could have reclaimed the division from Cleveland, or they could have even jumped up into a slightly higher wild card spot and could have taken on either the Yankees or the Blue Jays. Well, the Tigers end up going 1-2 in the series. Friday, they were in control 3-1 and then just kind of fell apart in the latter stages, ending up with a Red Sox walk-off from Rafaela, the center fielder. And it was 4-3 Boston. Second game, low scoring. 1-0 Boston lead early, and then Jamai Jones, a big two-run single. Those were the only two runs the Tigers needed. And the Tigers bullpen able to hold on, getting that win. And with that win, the Tigers officially clinched a playoff spot as the Astros a game back on the Tigers. The Tigers had the tiebreaker. So therefore, the Astros going into those last two games needed to win both their last two games and needed either Cleveland or Detroit to lose both of their last two games. So with the Tigers getting that last win, officially clinching a spot in the playoffs for them, it would be a matter of where they ended up. And end up losing the last game yesterday, 4-3. And this is a game going in after, you know, seeing who was pitching in that one. It's like, it's clear that, okay, the Tigers are in the playoffs. That's all they care about. We're going to shut things down in terms of pitching and save all the key pitchers for the postseason. So Paddock getting the start, allowing four runs in four plus innings. Again, not looking the best, which of course he hasn't really this season with the Twins or the Tigers, and that was his first time pitching in quite some time for the Tigers as well. First time in 9 days, which is pretty uncharacteristic for a pitcher. So, of course, going with him to start, Seawald in relief, and then Tanner Rainey, who has pitched with the Pirates and the Tigers this season, getting the last two winnings. So just based on who they're pitching, you already knew. It's like, okay, if the Tigers win this one, great. If not, then whatever. And it didn't even matter if the Tigers won that game anyways, because even if they did win, Cleveland still won their last game of the series with the Rangers. So even if Tigers had won that last game of the series, Cleveland still would have had the division by virtue of that tiebreaker. So with Cleveland winning two of the three games, the Tigers needed to sweep the Red Sox if they wanted to regain the division. Which is clear at this point, the Tigers are just happy to make the playoffs. With how they ended the season, I don't blame them. So here is the playoff field as of right now. For the American League, the Blue Jays, they clinched the number one seed, able to get a big win yesterday, and they finished tied with the Yankees, but they had the tiebreaker over the Yankees. That's why these tiebreakers are so important. I'm telling you, every year with baseball, just always comes down to the wire. Always comes down right to the end, even with 162 games, and that division came down to the end. Blue Jays win the division, I believe I saw for the first time since 2015. So good stuff for them. Blue Jays with the number one seed. And then you got the Mariners. They really finished the season hot. I'm actually really glad that the Tigers probably won't be on pace to face them in the playoffs, because that's going to be a tough, tough team, which unfortunately they will if they move past the Guardians in this wild card round. I believe they will have to face the Mariners. Winner of this series faces the Mariners. So that's a hot team. Going to be tough to beat them. And then, of course, Cleveland getting the last division win. for the American League. One win over the Tigers, and they had the tiebreaker anyways, even if the Tigers won yesterday. And the wild card spots, you got the Yankees, you got the Red Sox, and you got the Tigers, which if the Tigers did win yesterday, they would have tied with the Red Sox in the standings, and they have the tiebreaker over the Red Sox. So if the Tigers had won yesterday or had won on Friday, if they had won one more game in the series, the Tigers would have bumped up a spot in the wild card and would have faced the Yankees, which that's a team that won their last eight games of the season. The team is hot. And hot teams going to the playoffs are the dangerous ones. So, I mean, Cleveland, obviously hot the last few weeks. Not as hot, I mean, finishing the season, but I don't know. It's a lose-lose situation at this point for the Tigers in terms of facing a hot team, but anything can happen in the playoffs. And it's while it is tough to beat a team that many times in a row, Tigers do have to travel to Cleveland to face the Guardians and try to win two out of three. As I mentioned, winner of that series will take on the Mariners. And then the winner of the Yankees-Red Sox series will take on the Blue Jays, which, boy, that's going to be a fun series. Yankees-Red Sox, division rivals. And then the winner taking on another division rival. And, of course, the big news with the American League, besides the Tigers blowing a historic 15.5 game lead, largest lead in baseball history, mind you, blown for either a division or a league. So not good for the Tigers, but at least they make it to the playoffs anyways. The Astros missing the playoffs, I believe, for the first time since 2016. So, I mean, it looked like for a lot of the season, they probably would still be in the playoffs, but they just lost the division lead late against the Mariners. And that was a team that was kind of cold post-All-Star break. Of course, the Tigers had that series where they swept them. So the Astros tying with the Tigers, but because the Tigers had the tiebreaker, told you that's why these tiebreakers matter, the Astros are eliminated. So it's going to be weird to see a postseason without the Houston Astros. Meanwhile, just touching on the National League. So the Brewers, they finish with the league's best record in all of Major League Baseball, 97-65. They win the National League and home field advantage through the playoffs. Get the number one seed in the National League. Then you got the Phillies with 96 wins. And then the Dodgers. What's new? They win the National League West. They've pretty much controlled that division for the last 20 years. And the wild cards, the Cubs with the first wild card spot. The Padres, boy, they had a hot run in the second half of the season. And then the Reds. This was shocking. The Mets losing their tiebreaker with the Reds. And, of course, they lost their last game of the season. If they win, they're in. And the Mets with one of the highest payrolls ever. And, of course, with the offseason's biggest free agency signing in Juan Soto. The Mets missing out on the playoffs to the Cincinnati Reds, who are notoriously one of baseball's cheapest teams in making, obviously, in signing people and stuff. But they do have some good, fun young players, specifically Ellie De La Cruz. He's one of my favorite young players in baseball. So, the Reds, with that last playoff spot, Mets missing out. So, the Reds and the Dodgers, and the Cubs and Padres will face off in the National League Wild Card Series this week. And then the winner of the Cubs-Padres series will take on the Brewers in the next round, and then the winner of the Dodgers-Reds will take on the Phillies in the next round. So there is your Major League Baseball playoff field. Of course, am I happy with the way the Tigers finished the season? No, but hey, that's why you have to play. That's why you have to have good stretches, because obviously that hot streak, that hot first half of the season pre-All-Star break that the Tigers had, you know, that evidently that was able to buffer them from a historical collapse at the end of the season, and they were still able to make the playoffs, just barely, but able to make the playoffs on top of that. Game one is tomorrow at 110. As a matter of fact, all three games, if they even go to a third game, will be at 110. So at least the next 2 days will be shorter versions of On the Docket with those Tigers playoff games. So let's hope the Tigers can move on, avenge their late season collapse, able to take down the Guardians, and able to move on and try to make another postseason run. It just starts with a single game. We'll see if they can get a streak going. That'll do it for me, folks, today. Goodbye, everybody.
If you missed today's installment of On the Docket, podcast it at FoxSports1019.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in live weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.